Greetings, this is James Gillen, and I'm your host. We've got another great show tonight. And before we go into the show, I just want to make a few announcements. We did get the tree out of the meditation room. It is all cut up. The roof is patched on the outside, and we're going to be working on the inside. So this storm was pretty major that it hit here. As I said before, it looked like Godzilla went up, you know, the highway 141, and just took out telephone pole after telephone pole and tree after tree, and just snapped trees in half. It's just amazing. But anyway, everybody's back up. The power's back up here, and we're back online. And you know, we do have a little disturbance now and then from the powers that be that like to play with our recording apparatuses and phone lines. But luckily, we've been getting through that. And whenever they do, we just blast it out over the net and give it away free. So it goes out to even more people. But anyway, that being said, just want to let people know that we are back up. Our phones are working. We're back up on the net. And we're going to get back to people as soon as possible. We have a little backlog we're trying to catch up on. And if you don't hear from us, feel free to call us again or email again, because we did lose quite a few phone calls and emails due to the power outage. We had 8 days of no power. So, that being said, I want to get into this show. I think this is going to be a great one. We've got Tolek here on the air, and he's a human representative for the Andromeda Council, an intergalactic governance and development body of aligned benevolent star systems and planets for worlds in the Milky Way and the Andromeda Galaxy. And he's been given the name Tolek, which is simply a person of work name by the five people with whom he communicates, who are stationed in the primary Andromeda Council biosphere, where many of these meetings are held. I really want to hear more about this biosphere. Before I do, I want to welcome Tolek to the show. Are you with us?
Yes, I am. Oh, it's good to be here.
Yeah, thanks for coming on the show. Your name's popped up several times with people and people doing documentaries that want to add you into the documentary. And so I guess it's about time we connected and meet. And it seems we've had a lot of similar encounters.
Yeah, we sure have. It's been an amazing experience. It really has. From the first time that I was physically contacted in 93 to the most recent contact in September of 2010. And what I've learned since 2010 has just been, well, it's on the website. So everything that I've learned is there on the website, but the nuances are the best stuff to talk about, really.
Mm-hmm. Now, we'll give your website later at the end too as well, but we might as well give it now so people can go and check that out. What is the best way for people to get to your website or get a hold of you?
Oh, it's really simple. The website is Andromeda, Andromeda, Council.com.
Great. Yeah, that makes it simple. I'm really curious about, you know, when we can go from the beginning is when these contacts started ramping up and the nature of the contacts, but maybe you can enlightened us as to when all this started for you.
Sure. I can tell you that I was aware that there was something going on in my life that was, you know, extra special or extraordinary. I had moved to Tucson in the winter of 91, and I lived on the far northwest part of Tucson against the Catalina Mountains. And as I've come to learn, it's a very special area. From what I've heard from other people, it's supposed to be an area of highly concentrated, higher dimensional energy. Actually, much like Sedona is known to be. And in my early living experience there, I started to have dreams and visions. Now, keep in mind, this is, you know, 21 years ago. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, we're going back a ways. And so I was having a number of dreams and visions where I was seeing things from a perspective where I was out in space looking down at the planet. I saw certain things happen. I saw certain symbols in the dream state. I get a lot of them at, 2:30, 3:30, 4 in the morning, a lot of it during that time. And it's so vivid, it wakes me up. Mm-hmm. To fast forward from that January 91 time frame to March, May, June, July. I'd have to say it was probably August of 93. August of 93 is when I had the actual physical contact for the first time. And it was the contact was initiated by this gentleman who's the commander of the Primary Andromeda Council Biosphere, and his contact to me was telepathic.
Mm-hmm.
Now, keep in mind, I had had, at least a couple of years of different dream state, vision state, whispers, awakenings, nuances. It's not like somebody woke me up one day and said, "Time to go."
Mm-hmm.
It just didn't happen like that. It was a process. It was very progressive.
I'm just curious. Did you have your name? Would they say your name? Just you'd be sitting there and all of a sudden hear your name just out of the blue.
He didn't even. Well, by the time that he contacted me, he didn't even call me by name.
Yeah.
He just said, "I've got something I'd like for you to do." And I went,
mm-hmm.
"Oh, okay." And there had to be, at that moment in time, I didn't know it, but there was some kind of internal knowing. I knew who this gentleman was because when I got on the highway, drove down I-10, then drove down 19, I turned off this exit, a couple exits south of the San Javier Mission, went into the desert, I don't know, quarter of a mile, something like that, and I came over the last rise, and I saw this physical ship. It was probably 35, 40 feet in diameter as we would look at it, and I was probably 100 feet away from it when I stopped my, at a Bronco at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I hopped out of the Bronco, and I'm waving at him, "Hey, how are you? Good to see you again." And so I'm speaking to him, and he said, "Come on, we got to go." I'm like, "Boy, is it good to see you." Now, I didn't know why I knew him at that moment in time, but I obviously knew him from someplace, somewhere, sometime. And he looked at me, "Come on already, we got to go." So I ran over to his ship, and I joined him, and we took three trips, about the total of a week and a half to 2 weeks of time, total three trips back in time.
Mm-hmm.
Each time, and we traveled to the time period of the 1840s ish to I want to say Western Kentucky, West Virginia, somewhere in that rural area, and we watched, we observed from the ship, from the, if you will, the view screen in the ship.
Mm-hmm.
We observed the day-to-day life activities of this family of four. Mom, dad, and a couple of kids.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I've told this story before, but the reason why the story is profound for both me and him is that in observing this family, at the end of the third experience, about halfway through, there was a fire on the property in the barn, and the daughter, the youngest child, about three or four, she died as a result of that fire. And it was difficult for me to watch that experience and feel the human pain and the loss and the suffering, both for the family. The father was, of course, the mom was very, very sad, but the father was distraught.
Oh, yeah.
And it was hard for me to experience it and watch it. And I asked him why. Why did you bring me back to watch this experience? And he said, "Because we don't experience death. Those of us who live in the fourth dimension and the fifth dimension beyond, we don't experience physical death. We choose to have certain life experiences, certain learnings. We contribute to society. And we evolve and then we move on. But we don't die. And therefore, we don't experience the depth of the sadness and loss like you do. And I wanted to have a better understanding of it. And I was like, wow. So he said, you know, here we are at the end of this series of trips, and you can stay and be a guide for them, or you can go back. You can go back and live your life. And so here I am, and it's 2012. I'm back. I'm back. Yeah. So that's the whole story in detail.
Nice. Yeah, so obviously they have time travel capabilities, and who knows? I'm sure they have dimensional, they can jump dimensions as well.
Yeah, there's actually all of the people I'm communicating with, there are five of them, they're all like mid-level fourth dimensional people. Mm-hmm. And they're all human. Some of them have dark hair. Some of them look very Native American. There's a reason for that. Mm-hmm. There's, matter of fact, the vice chairwoman of the Andromeda Council, Tanya, she has blonde hair. They're human. Mm-hmm. They may be the next dimension up in vibration, but they're still human. They also happen to be taller than we are. We'd look at them and see a woman that's on average 6'2" to 6'4", mm-hmm. and a man on average that's 7'4" to 7'6", 7'8". Mm-hmm. And because they're fourth dimensional, they also weigh a lot less.
Yeah.
A fourth dimensional woman might weigh 7 or 8 pounds, mm-hmm. because their bodies are of fine matter material, not gross, dense organic matter like us, but fine matter. Mm-hmm. So they weigh less too, but they're human. They're human people by every description.
Now the Andromedans, what I'm understanding, because it seems like many, many people are having different contacts with Andromedans, and some are seeing blue beings, you know, blue skinned beings, some are seeing really tall beings, some are seeing beings with magnetized light bodies, and so I've even heard of little tiny short little beings that come from the Andromeda. I know Alex Collier had some connections with two or three different types of beings from Andromeda. I don't know if has that been the same case with you?
Interesting topic, actually. I can tell you this, and this is actually a good place to start regarding this topic. The Andromeda Council is made up of 12 distinct member races, and their representatives from each of those member races, and those are the 12 senior Andromeda Council members. There are mm-hmm. a whole host of other members that have junior status as well. Mm-hmm. The council itself is very much like an intergalactic and interstellar, I want to say governmental body, but it's more accurate to say an interstellar and intergalactic UN. That's the best analogy. That's the best analogy that I can give people. Mm-hmm. And so you have 12 senior members, a whole bunch of junior members, and that's just about, you know, status and how long that they've been on the council. Mm-hmm. There are hundreds of planets that are involved, and they comprise people from the third dimension, like people from Earth. Mm-hmm. People from the fourth, the fifth, and the sixth. Some third, a minority, but mostly fourth and fifth dimensional people. Now, with that as a backdrop, here's some clarity on Andromeda. Andromeda, as we look at it from Earth, is one of the named constellations. Mm-hmm. It has its own history. Inside, sort of dead center and higher up, as you would look at the Andromeda constellation, is the Andromeda galaxy. So I would ask people like I do, well, okay, you say you're from Andromeda, but are you talking about the Andromeda constellation or the Andromeda galaxy? As an example, the vice chairwoman, Tanya, she is from a world called Teriel, T-E-R-I-A-L.
Mm-hmm.
Her star is Mirak, just like our star is Sol, S-O-L. Her mm-hmm. star is Mirak, M-I-R-A-C-H, and that's her sun, and she's from the Andromeda Galaxy. Now, the vice chairman, he's from a planetary star system that happens to reside within the context of the Andromeda constellation, as we see it from Earth space, but his planet's still in the Milky Way galaxy. So I would simply ask people, I've got the curiosity to ask, all right, well, who are you and which Andromeda are you from?
Uh-huh.
You know, constellation or galaxy? The best way I get answers is to say, show me a map. Show me your star system, and telepathically they lead me to some maps, and I go, oh, okay, that's where you're from.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a whole range of people from a whole bunch of places, all sizes, shapes, colors. And there are also some beings that are decidedly not human, as we would look at them. I mean, they're humanoid.
Yeah.
The humanoid body type of head, shoulders, chest, torso, two arms, two legs, mouth, ears, nose. It's the predominant body type across the cosmos.
Mm-hmm.
But we come in more varieties than people could even imagine. And sizes, shapes, colors, mm-hmm. light green skin, light blue skin, mocha colored,
mm-hmm.
short and squatty, tall and thin.
All the above.
Yeah, exactly.
I always tell people, how are you going to deal with these other civilizations when you can't even deal with the different colored skin on Earth, or the different races here on Earth? What if a feline appears to you, or a short little E.T. squatty guy, like the movies, yeah. Or whatever, what if they're blue? It's like...
James, you bring up a really good point, and that's why this time of transition on this planet, before the collective, those of us who will choose to become higher dimensional people, whether it's mid fourth, upper fourth, fifth, whatever, the time of transition on this planet is really all about an awakening. And, but many, many people from all walks of life are starting to talk about an awakening in the form of consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
So before evolution to another dimensional level of existence is a greater awareness and consciousness. And I believe, it's my opinion, that a greater level of awareness and consciousness means that we should all open our arms and our hands, if you will, in a hugging fashion, to embrace people, because we all come of the same sacred essence that's the creation of life. We're all brothers mm-hmm. and sisters. Whether you're Caucasian or Native American or from Africa or from India, we all ended up on this planet. As Wendell Stevens used to say, there's more diversity on this planet than probably anywhere else in the cosmos. We as a single planet are a microcosm of the universe. And it's a challenge for us to get along. But the best thing we can do is, as best as possible, embrace our differences, embrace our diversity, and say, we're all brothers and sisters on this one planet. Let's start acting like it.
Mm-hmm.
Let's start treating each other better. Let's start acknowledging that whatever color you are, whatever way you believe, it really doesn't matter, because we're all human. We're all human, plain and simple.
Yeah, I had a Native American elder that a very good friend of mine, and was talking to him about this, and he was talking about the rainbow. People and the Rainbow Nation coming together, and where all peoples are coming together But he kept saying, "My people, you know, my people, my people." And I told him, and I was smiling, and he goes, "What are you smiling about?" And I said, "My people are everywhere."
Right.
I said, they're not just one nation or one color or living in, in one area or whatever. They're throughout the galaxy. So, and he started smiling, he says, "Yeah, I got to stop that. I got to drop." And I said, "We really do. We have to transcend all religious and cultural boundaries, get beyond that and realize we're all souls. We're all spirits. We all came from the same source. And we're all right. going back to the same source. And if we just would grasp that one reality and that source is everywhere, it's omnipresent, then all this other nonsense would just fall away."
Oh, absolutely. I've done a lot of travel personally in my life and for business. And whenever I've traveled across the globe, I can only speak for me, but I've always been amazed at other people and how they live. Mm-hmm. I was in Africa for business a couple of years ago. Amazing people, amazing warmth and kindness. The same can be said for a lot of other places that I've been to. I've been to Mexico, I've been to the Bahamas, I've been to Canada, I've been to the East. We're far more alike than we all realize. But I would say to anybody who wanted to point out the differences in people to celebrate them, be curious about them, mm-hmm. but not criticize people because they're different.
Yeah, it's like going to Baskin Robbins and say, and going for vanilla every time,
Well said.
And you're just going, "Well, why would God just create vanilla?"
Right.
What a boring universe this would be. And look at all the different experiences. You can jump into all these different multicolored earth suits and cultures and have diverse experiences. And, this would be such a boring planet if basically everything was vanilla.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's my own perspective that the diversity is what makes it interesting, because, what people eat and celebrate in France is not what they eat and celebrate in Papua New Guinea, not what they eat and celebrate in Greece, for example. It's an amazingly diverse world. This wouldn't be considered typically an extraterrestrial influence story, but I want to touch back on the story of my trip to Africa. We had finished our work for the week, and we were going out to dinner on a Friday night. And the gentleman who was being host to us said, "I want to take you to some place. It's a large mall, and the anchor store is a Stop and Shop." I said, "Excuse me?" He said, "It's a Stop and Shop grocery store." Well, that's a predominant grocery store in the northeast of the U.S., but it's not the same chain, I can tell you that. In any case, we were walking through the store. There was a young mother. I want to say she was 22 to 24 years old. Mm-hmm. She had a stroller. She was stopped in the middle of the store. All these people were walking by her. And the baby was in the stroller, and she was trying to she was trying to reconnect the left front wheel. And so the five of us were walking by. I saw what was going on. I said, "Guys, go ahead." And I stopped. And I simply looked at her in the eyes, and I lifted up, because I didn't know what language she spoke, but I simply lifted the carriage for her so she could take a moment to reattach the wheel. We did this together. The child was fine. Put the carriage back down. And before we got up, because we were both kind of in a crouch position, she looked at me with the most kind, loving eyes I've ever experienced. No hint of anything else except for a pure expression of love and thanks. Mm-hmm. And she didn't even speak. I just I just nodded at I nodded my head to her and I said, "You're welcome." And off I went on my way. But when we stop to slow down to see these things going on in our lives, that's when it starts to become beautiful. It really does. And I have other stories like that, which are different. It's an amazing planet. Absolutely.
Oh, it is. Yeah, if you just stop and take a moment, you know, to be of service and helpful. I had an experience similar like that with a little girl, and she looked like a little doll, a really small. She looked like a little fairy, basically, but her eyes were just electric blue and lit up. And she went walking by me with her mother in her hand, and they went walking by, and she just looked up at me as I walked by and stared at me. And then I went, "Oh, my God," you know, like, "Who is this kid? You know, where's this kid from?" And then she pulls her hand out of her mother's arm and turns and runs over to me and just gives me a big hug. And her mom was kind of embarrassed by it. You know, I knelt down and gave her a hug.
That's so cool.
Yeah. And her mom walked up. She goes, "I'm sorry. I'm sorry." And I go, "Why?" I go, "Why would you be sorry?" I go, "Do you know who your daughter is? Do you have any idea?" And she goes, "I'm starting to figure it out." And I said, "You know, I don't know where she's from, but she's not from here." And I said, "But you really need to keep her open and listen to her, listen to her stories and what she has to say." Because I said, this little girl is as close to God as you're ever going to get, you know? But you know, the transformation that happened there with me in looking into that the child's eyes was what I go, that is what we lost. You know, this is.
Well, that's the same kind of a pure beauty, pure love. Mm-hmm. That's the same kind of pure love that I saw in this woman's eyes. Mm-hmm. That's all there was.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
Just pure innocence, no agenda, yeah, just pure
right.
love. You're going, what happened? How did we lose that? You know.
Well, I'll tell you what. And whatever I tell the story, it touches me very deeply, because that mm-hmm. moment in time, that brief 3 to 4 minutes moment in time, was timeless. Mm-hmm. And I honestly felt that I had been blessed by this woman's gift to me. Her gift was the sharing of her love and her appreciation for a simple act. It didn't take me long to do what I did.
Mm-hmm.
But it's what she gave me in return that struck me the deepest. That was a profound moment for me. And I've had some profound moments in my life, but out of all the ones in the past 3 years, that's the one that stands out the greatest. So I can appreciate... Having had my own experience, I can appreciate your story with that little girl.
I figured you would. It's just like your experience. That one is ingrained into my mind, and I'll never forget it. And just the transfer of energy and just seeing that pure, sweet innocence, you know, was very transforming. But, you know, I'm just hoping she can maintain that and not get beat down by social consciousness and, you know, programmed like they try to do with all the kids and turn them into a little neutered zombie, you know?
Yeah. Well, I get it. They want to plug them into the school system and learn this, rote, memorize this. But, you know, to bring these two stories back to this topic of consciousness,
mm-hmm.
I believe that that's where we are currently evolving to as a race. We're starting to wake up to understand that within each of us is this great source of light that comes from whatever you call God, creation, light, love,
mm-hmm.
whatever that original creative source is, it's in each and every one of us. And we have the individual power to be kind and loving to each other with no agenda. With no agenda.
Yeah, that's the trick. I mean, that's hard to find. Somebody without an agenda is not easy to find. I mean, I have a few friends here that are very service oriented, and you know, their agenda is the awakening and healing of humanity and the earth, and and each is working at it, you know, in their own unique way to different degrees. But, you know, it's amazing. But I feel like I'm in a bubble when I get out into the big world, you know, whatever you want to call
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I don't want to call it the real world because it's really not real, you know. But
it's that frenetic pace of people going to work and going to the grocery store and all of the busyness of their lives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
the constant chatter and yammering and psychic turbulence and everything. You just go, I just have to get out of there. I mean, when I go to conferences or speak at conferences, I'll go and I've got a limit where I have to get back up to the mountain or get into a space that's out in nature, that's clean, you know, or clear.
Yeah, absolutely. You touch on a topic that's really important. There are a lot of people who've been asking me recently, well, how did you do this? How can I get in touch with them? How do I have contact? You know, and on and on. And I said, and I have said and continue to say, quite honestly, the first thing that I would recommend, the best thing that I recommend you do is turn off the negative-oriented television broadcast called the news that happens anywhere between, you know, 5 to 6:30 every night. Number one, turn it off. Number two, find different ways to quiet your mind. And the best thing that Tonka, the spiritual ambassador of the Andromeda Council, has told me, Tonka from Planet Dakota, he continues to tell me, go out into nature. Get in touch with the sounds and the smells of this beautiful life that you have on this planet. You know, walk in the grass. Feel the wind, whether it's warm or cold. Feel the wind blow through your hair. If you live by the ocean, go to the ocean. Smell the salt. Go to a lake. Walk by a river. But by getting back in touch with nature, you will start to quiet all the chatter and the noise that keeps coming into your head. Mm-hmm. And then you'll be able to start to quiet enough so if you're interested, you can start to have the initial stages of contact. And those initial stages are more subtle. They're, as you know, they're in vision state, they're in the dream state, they're nuanced.
A lot of feelings and body sensations and things like that that come with the first contacts.
Absolutely, absolutely. But that's what he's told me from the beginning. He's like, you know, you are blessed because you already get out into nature. But people have a right to know that that's where they can reconnect with themselves. And that's an amazingly simple message.
Yeah, I had a lama said that. He said that there's so few enlightened people on this planet because it's so damn simple. and he said, just get out in nature, sit down, and shut up. You know.
Wow.
and it was really funny, and he was just to the point. And I mean, this guy could bilocate, and you could see right through him. He'd start to vanish, and all kinds of things. But wow. You know, he goes. Mankind has gotten so complicated and so in the head that they don't know how to drop down into the heart and feel where the real knowledge is and get in touch with their soul, which has a vast amount of knowledge, which is connected to the source itself. And he said that's the whole problem is this intellectual rhetoric and stimulus and constant go. It's just, you know, that it's actually designed to keep you unconscious and keep you disconnected.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right. That is getting out into nature and absorbing all that this beautiful planet has for us in all of its different forms. It is an amazing way to go from the head to the heart. And you make a really good point. And this is only for me, I can speak for me, I can make this recommendation, but I'm speaking for me. When I make decisions, I run them through my heart and my, if you will, my intuition, my intuitive filters.
Mm-hmm.
And then I double check what I've done sometimes, less and less these days, but I will at some point double check it with my intellect, my mind, my brain. But I've got to tell you, 95% of the time, and I'm being real here. 95% of the time, my decisions are really accurate when I'm running them through my heart and my intuition first.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a complete turnaround from 20 years ago.
You know, what's interesting too is that when you are operating that way, you're totally out of sync with social consciousness, and people can't figure out until they see the byproduct of the decision. Then they go, "Wow, how'd you know that?" You know, or why did you go in that direction? You know, it may not have made no sense whatsoever intellectually until you see the end product or the outcome.
Yeah, sometimes there are. Geez, I can't even keep track of all the times that I've made a decision and or I've just absorbed a concept and said, this is right, and I know it is. And I go, all right, well, why do I know? I can't tell you why I know. I just know that this is the way this particular thing is. And again, that's one of those where it's really strange. I have a really high percentage of when I've said something like that to myself, I'm accurate. I'm dead nuts right on.
Mm-hmm.
And I've fortunately gotten to the place where I stop questioning myself. I'm like, okay, this is what it is. Next, just kind of move on.
Moving on.
Yeah. It's just personal evolution.
Yeah.
That's all.
Some of the other beings, can you talk about some of the other beings? I'm kind of curious. We've actually photographed some beings that have showed up here, and one has a head just like the guy in the movie E.T. kind of, but big, broad shoulders and very stocky being, but they're wearing robes. They appeared here, and we actually got a photograph of them. And what happened is most people, when you see entities like this, would actually run. I mean, it would scare the crap out of them. But if you stick around and master your fear and go by your intuition or your feeling and feel these beings, you can feel they're very loving, and these beings are very ancient beings, and also too, we're having a lot of these feline beings appear that are just beautiful, humanoid feline beings, very, very loving, very concerned with where we're going here on the planet. And there's been a long history of these beings. You know, they called them Narsringa in India. They were the benevolent protectors, and then Sekhmet was one of the higher beings that had more of a lion
sure.
head. But some have a head like a lion, some look more like a panther, and some look like a cat, more of a humanoid cat, but they're upright. They can run on all fours if they want, I guess, but some of them can, but they're actually upright, and they're more humanoid, especially the fifth dimensional ones are much more humanoid.
Huh. Wow, that's an amazing story. I've got a couple stories I can share with you. I know that from having been to a number of subcommittees or advisory committee meetings to the council itself,
mm-hmm.
I've met people from all sorts of different races, having all sorts of different looks. They're predominantly human, the ones mm-hmm. that I've met. As I said before, all sizes, shapes, colors. But I'll tell you, and it's not a story I tell often, I was being given a tour of a, I guess it was a kind of a chamber, like a waiting room.
Mm-hmm.
And the chief medical officer of all of the biospheres, she and Tanya, the vice chairwoman, they were giving me a tour. This was early on. My new contact, if you will, started in September of 10. And somewhere in, I want to say, late October, November, I was up, I believe, on the biosphere, but I was in this waiting room, and they were giving me this tour, and they were exposing me to different beings. And I guess I got to, like, the ninth or tenth one,
mm-hmm.
and he was male, but he kind of looked like a one-third size version, and now I'm going to make a science fiction reference, he was like a one-third size version of Jabba the Hutt from Star Wars.
Oh yeah.
And I'm not a Star Wars fan, but I'd seen that movie.
Uh-huh.
And I had gotten through the first eight people just fine. I saw this guy and went, bah!
Yeah.
Get me out of here. bang, I was, back on Earth and back in my Earth body. Mm-hmm. And so I had a talk with them later on that night. And I said, what was that all about? And so they explained this tour. And they said, it wasn't a tour per se so much as it was we wanted to get a sense for how good your tolerance limit would be to exposing you to more exotic-looking extraterrestrial races. And she said, and they both said, we pushed, and you did really, really well.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, yeah. And then came Slimy Worm Guy. And they're like, yep. And that's when you lost it. And they were laughing. I was having a good time. But I honestly don't remember what they all look like, other than, again, different sizes, colors, and, mm-hmm. and hair colors. There is one race that I remember that has they're light green skinned, and they have pointy ears.
Mm-hmm.
And they're one of the four races that are planning to visit us. I believe it'll be sometime mid this year. There are four races that are affiliated planets of the Andromeda Council: Ventra, Nicotè, Teleca, and Retol. And it was the green skin race, female green skin, and she had pointy ears,
mm-hmm.
Bob, just like a bobcat. And I'm like, wow, this is cool.
How tall was she?
About 6'2".
Wow.
At least 6'2", uh-huh. 6'4".
So it definitely wasn't like a little elf or leprechaun type
no.
of thing. It was like much bigger.
Yep. And she had like strawberry blonde, almost reddish hair.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty big eyes. Big eyes, but very pretty eyes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of these beings are what I'm understanding is that they're adaptations to their environment. And I know there's a lot of other genetic tinkering that's gone on over the bazillion years that humanoids have been running around. But a lot of them are mineral. They're copper-based instead of iron-based. And so their skin would be green. And,
yes.
And that's the only difference. It's just they're copper-based instead of iron-based.
Yeah. The gentleman that I referred to as the spiritual ambassador from the Andromeda Council, he also happens to be the ambassador from the planet Dakotè.
Mm-hmm.
And I just did a story and a video on this topic. Dakotè is the home planet, the planet of origin of the Dakota, Lakota, and Nakota people.
Mm-hmm.
And a few other Native American that are today Native Americans. And he looks like what you would think a Native American elder would look like.
Mm-hmm.
He's tall. He's proud in terms of, this sort of wise, knowing face. Amazing snowy white hair.
Mm-hmm.
He has amazing intellect and amazing sense of humor. He's always pulling a leg.
I had an encounter with a guy just like that. It was really interesting. I thought he was Native American, but he was talking to me about the Star Nations, and he said, tell them we're coming. He said, let them tell.
That's right.
Yeah, he said, let them know we're coming. That we're, that it's not long that we're coming, and so I do have some friends that are Lakota elders and chiefs and things like that. And I did tell him, I said, this guy appeared with snowy white hair, looked very Native American, like an elder. And all he told me was, tell them that we're coming, that it's not long to hang on, that we're coming. So, and then he showed me an image of a couple other people I was supposed to tell this to, which I haven't met yet. But one of them actually looked, it was an elder too, with white hair. And I haven't met him yet. But I guess I'm supposed to be like a cheerleader, you know, to
Yeah,
kind of boost up his spirits a little bit, saying, "Hang on, hang on." You know, we're almost ready. You know, so.
He would be known as a Wika EDP Oyate, and if you're Lakota, Wichapi Oyate. So I've learned both the Dakota and Lakota versions. He would also be known as a Tunkasina with an S or Tunkasila with an L if you're Lakota, a Star Nation elder. And he and a couple of other star ambassadors, if you will be visiting the Dakota, Lakota, and Nakota people, and help them to understand that they too are one. They come from the same. They not only come from the same planet, but they all come from Wankantaka, which is the great mystery, great spirit.
Yeah.
The creator, whatever name that you want to that creative source. So, you know, we have an amazing history, even in this melting pot of the United States, of star people that settled at one point in time and came here. They came here like 50,000 years ago from another part of the earth. They were somewhere else, and they migrated here to what they call Grandmother Turtle Island. And the Dakota people are all of them. He's the ambassador to those people and all of the Native Americans west of the Mississippi River. And apparently there's another star ambassador who handles everybody east of the Mississippi River. So they'll be visiting with somebody else, which is kind of neat. So it's going to be 2012 is going to be a kick. There's going to be a lot a lot of visitation going on.
I've always had that on the back burner of my mind, you know, that he showed me a couple people that I was supposed to connect with, but I'm sure that the universe will arrange it, it just end up going somewhere and run into these people, and
it'll happen.
And we'll know each other when it happens.
And you know what this is like, because sometimes all it takes is the desire. You know, you have a firm desire. It's something that you want. And I have discovered that the more clear and the more conscious and aware we are, the faster things manifest. I don't know about your life, but for me, that's...
things are moving so fast. I can't. Yeah, at one time I just had to surrender because, you know, you're trying to figure it all out and things are manifesting so fast. And then finally I just said, you know, I give up.
That's right.
I give up. I'm just going to take it one day at a time as it comes. And I have to get in that space of total detachment and just let it go through, you know, move up and go through or whatever.
I'm good. I've had moments like that, but I'm definitely getting there. It's this whole process has been a journey of unfoldment for me, even at this stage of my life. It's been a real seasoning process. Real seasoning process.
Yeah, it seems like the tests don't stop. You know, people go, "Okay, I'm enlightened." You know, now I'm done. You know, and I go, "No." You know, I like what they say in India: the closer you get to Nirvana, the more the demons rear their ugly heads. And it is so true. It's like self-mastery. It doesn't have a beginning and ending, I don't think. I think it's an ongoing process.
No, it's definitely evolution. What I have learned about this part of self-mastery is, I can't even think of a specific lesson off the top of my head right now, but if there's one lesson, you can guarantee the fact that this lesson is going to be just like an onion, and it's going to have probably on a per-person basis at least three or four layers. If you can get through those first three or four layers of those first three or four lessons of that specific lesson, by the time you get to the fourth or fifth one, you go, "Oh, okay, I know what this is." And I've learned this one already. And that's when they'll stop. Mm-hmm. Of that particular lesson, that's when they'll stop. Because you see it coming down the road. You know how to handle it. You know how to respond.
Yeah. And I've got a couple of those going around in circles. Where each time it's a little different, you know.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah, but yeah. It's the same one, and you just go, "Oh, yeah, I remember this one," you know. And some of them are almost like you've already done it redundantly, and you go, "Okay, this is the part where I say this, and this is the part where you say this," and
right.
You already know the whole scenario and where it's going to go and what's going to happen. But yeah, it's kind of funny.
Well, there's another aspect to this, which is if there's a dynamic, you know, between you and another person. Mm-hmm. And it has the opportunity to continue, you can simply say to the other person, you know, I love you who you are, I love you for who you are, I respect the position that you're taking. This is an internal dialogue, by the way. Mm-hmm. And I don't necessarily agree with the position you're taking, but I respect it. And I don't want to give this issue any more energy. So you simply end whatever that issue is, end that conversation, and you let the person go on the way, and you give it no more energy. You let it go on its way. Mm-hmm. And by doing that, if that's the end of the cycle that's supposed to end it, then it'll end. Why? Because you haven't given any more fuel. Because mm-hmm. each of us have the right to do that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I... You know, sometimes I have you probably run into the same thing too, but I mean, there's times I've actually gotten after the Star Nation guys, you know, and said, you know, hey, get your butt down here, get your hands dirty. I'm tired of this, you know, having to do everything, having all these things. Where the hell are you? You know, you could very easily make this problem go away, you know, but they don't, you know, but they, you know, I still have to walk through it, unfortunately, but, you know, I'm sure you probably have the same thing sometimes, just going, come on, guys, we need some help down here and some big help, you know.
Yeah. Very, very true. Everything you're saying is true. I've had my own moments of frustration, and the bottom line is, it's our planet. Mm-hmm. We're responsible for each ourselves. We're responsible for our own unique decisions. We're responsible to the best degree that we can help others, to help others. We're responsible for picking up, and I do this. I'll walk out in the desert, or I'll walk on a beach or on a sidewalk, mm-hmm. and I'll bend over and take the time to pick up plastic, foam, cardboard, mm-hmm. paper cups, stuff that's blown around. Why? It's my planet. I live here. Mm-hmm. That's just a small example. I'm sorry if I'm sounding like I'm preaching, but we have responsibility to take care of this planet and the people on it. Mm-hmm. And whether it's, you know, dumping oil and gas, or as simple as throwing plastic and paper cups out the car window, or just dropping it, we should be doing opposite. Mm-hmm. We should be cleaning it as much as possible. We should be informing people how much these simple acts are so important in taking care of our world. And yet, I'm astounded at how many people just don't care.
Oh yeah, yeah, I've seen that too. It's quite an educational process that some people are, you know, basically in kindergarten, and some people have mastered it, but.
Well said.
You know, I guess, you know, everybody's at their own pace. They may be highly evolved in different areas. Who knows? The thing about intervention, what I felt is that these guys have the technology to totally clean this planet up. They have all the fuelless energy technologies, anti-gravity, counter-gravity, healing technologies beyond our imagination. Everything we need to turn this place into heaven on earth is there. But the only thing is that we are making choices, and we continually choose to use techniques, and you know we use the big pharma, we use oil, we use the war industry to take from others versus manifest from within. We keep running these old programs, and until we choose not to run these programs and start asking for help, then it's just not going to come. It's like it's an individual and collective responsibility. Wouldn't you say, are you getting the same information, basically? Or?
Well, there's you touched on like at least three or four different important issues there, Here we go. It is our planet. To some degree, we've elected people to powerful positions. Mm-hmm. We don't really, those of us who are like you and I and all the rest of us who we're awake, but to some degree, we don't have the ability to influence the people at the very top running this planet. Mm-hmm. So that being said, the people that we can influence, advise, educate, enlighten are simply the people that reach out and ask to be educated, ask to be enlightened, ask mm-hmm. how do we wake up, how to become more aware. In terms of my own Andromeda Council contacts, the people of the Procyon system, I think they're the 10th member of the council, they freed themselves from the tyranny, if you will, the oppression, the years of psychic and emotional abuse from the combined, if you will, access powers of the Draco and Hydra reptilians with their buddies, the clone Greys, mm-hmm. for years. And these people, the people from Procyon, acting with the full support and backing the Andromeda Council, have been the ones that are using specifically attenuated sonic frequency beams to take out different underground and undersea bases around the globe. Mm-hmm. And they started with the one in Virginia, then Colorado, Arizona, all of New Mexico is taken out. Matter of fact, all of the U.S., there are no longer any functioning underground bases that are run by reptilians or greys or Illuminati. They're all cleaned out. Mm-hmm. And they took out one in the Gulf of Aden, as they promised. They took out the one in the East China Sea, as they promised. And the whole sum and substance of this story, the point is, they're here to level the playing field because we don't have the ability or the technology or the vibrational ability. We don't function where they do. Mm-hmm. We don't have the capability to take out beings that have been manipulating and abusing quite a few people on this planet for a long, long time. So there is help and intervention, but it's not in our day-to-day lives. It's not mm-hmm. in our day-to-day decision making. It's our responsibility to make decisions for ourselves, for our educational systems, and for healthcare and for government and everything else. Mm-hmm. But if they can help level the playing field by getting the reptilians, the greys off this planet, they're going to continue to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm definitely all for that. I've had my encounters with those guys, and it is. You have to stand toe to toe with them, and maintain your own self authority. And also, good to have some other higher beings and higher places to call in for assistance. But overall, the majority of the masses, don't even know how much they're being manipulated, and how much damage is being done to them on every level, not just physically, but mentally and emotionally and spiritually. How much they've been oppressed on all these levels. They have no idea of what they're capable of. Once all this nonsense ends, once they end with the psychotronics, the chemtrails, the harp, and all the other nonsense that they're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. Matter of fact, I can address these because I know about the intimate details of what happened, how I. In both these bases. These bases, thousands of feet deep under the ocean, had transmitters. beacons, transmitters, if you will. That once a day, they would raise up, and they would project certain frequencies with the one in the Gulf of Aden, specifically toward the Saudi Arabian Peninsula. And that would reach, of course, Israel, Iraq, Iran, Syria, Jordan. And those frequencies specifically were about confusion, agitation, anger, more confusion, agitation, and anger. And that, those had been running for, I think they told me, 5,000 years?
Yeah.
So that's a long period of abuse. Well, all right, so that base is taken out, but you still have a race of people living in that region who have been messed with for a long, long time. It's going to take some degree of time and healing for them to heal. They've emotionally and psychically, and emotionally and spiritually.
Yeah.
They need the time and an opportunity to heal.
Yeah, this seems like the puppet masters of these darker forces also, which have been in power for so long, are just now starting to be challenged and exposed, you know, for who they are, and that's what I've seen is their whole support system just went kablooey, you know, and now they've got to deal with without the backup, you know, they've got to deal one on one with the people that they have been abusing for so long.
Yep, that's right. And, you know, they're trying to perpetuate it with this whole diatribe on Iran.
Yeah.
Whatever the powers be, were, aren't anymore, try to pull, it's going to blow up in their faces. We're not going to see. And I've had this conversation with other people. Maybe you want to explore it, but there are some people who are worried about, oh, what about Iran? Oil and World War III, and there's going to be a nuclear war. Wrong. The topic of World War III is about an attempt to suppress or secure the awakening consciousness and the awakening nature of acknowledgement of spiritual life and the change that we're all going through. World War III is about the heart and the minds and the souls and the consciousness of the people on this planet. It's not about guns and missiles and bombs at all. And the whole, what do you call it, the whole Occupy movement is just a beautiful example of, guess what? People are waking up and they're not going to stay asleep anymore.
Yeah, and they're not going to be suppressed. I mean, although they're trying it, they're just suppressed. It's like a pressure cooker, you know. They're pushing it down and putting more pressure on it, but it's gonna blow up. I like how they came in and kicked them all out one time, and then I think it was in the New York, they kicked everybody out, and then all of a sudden everybody just came, like three times more people came back, you know. So my feeling is that, you know, I think America is going to have its own Arab Spring here, you know, real soon. And I think all the information is there. All of the war and disease profiteers and their nonsense is all over the media. It may not be in the mainstream, but it's sure all over the net. And everything is being exposed for what it is, which is part of a process I'm sure you've been observing and been told about. It's all up there for everybody to see now. And what used to be hidden is just in everybody's faces, you know. So it's going to be interesting to see what the next step is with all this.
I believe that you'll see the kind of uprising that you're talking about when this economy collapses. And it's going to. It's coming. And when people feel like they have no choices and they're pushed so far back in a corner, that's usually when they start to respond. And it's progressively getting that way.
Yeah, there's an old saying, you know, you take away you take away a man's job, you know, he's going to be really angry. You take away his home, he's going to be really pissed off. You take away his food and forget it.
it's
over with, you know. And that's where it's headed, you know, basically, especially, you know, with all this crazy stuff they're doing, you know, with trying to get rid of natural food and impose their synthetic eugenics crops on everybody. You know, that's just getting to be another form of insanity.
Yeah.
You know, but I know that seems to be being exposed everywhere, and that's blown up in their face as well.
Yeah, I haven't, I was in Portland, Oregon, a few months ago, and I was in a store downtown Portland.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, why is this stuff all marked organic? Well, because this. It all comes from the ground. It's all organic. He said, well, no, understand that a lot of the stuff that we have here, it's grown out in the country. There are pure farming methods. There are no pesticides. There's no crop control. They're all naturally grown. I'm like, oh, okay, great. It was an amazing experience. It's an amazing community. I don't know if people spent any time in Portland, Oregon, but
yeah,
the people are pretty awake and aware down there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we do that here. We grow a lot of our own food here, and you know, it's we try to live close to the land and definitely do the nature time and the quiet time and do Yigong and Qigong and Tiangong, sure, and several other ones, you know, it's on a regular basis. But all those processes are basically the processes of no mind, they call them. You know, it's about getting out of the mind and bringing balance back to your body and keep your energy channels open.
Yeah. Hey, James, tell me what are your own contacts telling you about an appropriate moment in time when they'll decide to be more open about their visitation with, I don't know how many people, but
yeah,
do they have a particular, I don't know, a theme that they're telling you? It's like, listen, when your planet gets the stage that.
Well, you know, basically what they've been telling me over and over again is that we need to rise to the occasion. And we need to do our, you know, we need to clean up our consciousness and our actions and start living a wholesome spiritual life and actually set the intent for that, you know, to reunite with these higher beings and these, you know, ultra-dimensional, whatever, you know, intergalactic, everybody has a different name for them. But they really reinforce that about how we need to, you know, release the past. They always say you've got to release the past, all of your old wounds and traumas and heal. You know, their main focus is we have to heal rising consciousness. But they said if enough of us do that and enough of us put the intent out for contact, which is already happening, contact's happening all over the world right now, but it's with people who have risen to the occasion.
That's correct.
And they're not part of social consciousness, you know, so you're not going to hear much about it in social consciousness, but it's happening all over the world. But they're saying now, from here on out, basically, it's going to escalate. And I'm getting incredible videos from around the world of just, you know, 5 or 6 ships hovering over major cities in broad daylight, doing all kinds of maneuvers that are definitely not, you know, known aircraft. And it's just overwhelming right now. So they are putting on quite a show around the world.
Oh, the commander of the Primary Andromeda Council Biosphere said there are no less than 100+ races that are in Earth space, minimum. You know, I don't remember the exact number, but 100+ that are at least observing us and what we are doing at this moment in time.
Did you hear about the Russian experience? That was quite interesting. There was a UFO that hovered over a Russian airport, a major airport there. It actually shut down the airport for a little while. And the pilots and the tower heard this feminine voice that sounded like a cat speaking to them over the intercom, and then it disappeared. I thought that was amazing. That validates, you know, the feline beings that we're in contact with. So
I was going to say, it sounds like some of your people. That's great.
Yeah, and they've just made themselves known to us. It's like we've mainly been dealing with, you know, Andromedans, Pleiadians. There's a group, the Orion Council of Light group, and things sure. like that. We've been dealing with them on a regular basis, but these feline beings have just now started contacting us and showing us that they're multidimensional beings as well. They're on the fifth, sixth, and seventh dimensions. And they look different. You know, the ones, you know, on the sixth dimension look different than the ones on the fifth. But
Do you happen to know which star system they're originally from?
Well, the one that they said that they're from now is Sirius. And they didn't give me details. And I've heard other people say that they also were on ancient Lyra at one time. And I've heard different stories. But the ones that the Bagheet, there's one named Bagheet that I work with quite often. And she said she's from the Sirius system. But she said it's not, in a way, she said, don't pigeonhole them because they're kind of a galactic family, and they're working all over, you know, throughout the galaxy and other dimensions as well, you know, on these on these major ships, and they've taken up residence in other places as well.
Yeah, do they have biospheres like the one I've experienced and the one that you were asking about? I mean, where they have, you know, there's this planetoid.
Yeah.
And they're living and working inside of it?
They do. They've told me about that. I haven't had that experience. My experiences have been kind of limited, basically. They came down once, and I got a ride on a physical ship and just flew around the area. And that was for my own experience. And then that was one encounter with some Palladians. You know, they said they're from the Palladians, so, you know, I have to take that. But very, very loving human beings, a little taller, sure. more refined than we are. And then the Orion Council of Light ship, they beamed me right out of body up on the ship. And the ship was more of a plasma ship. And I had a conversation with the female there for a while. And then the other one was when I went out of body and I went up on one of the ships, and there was all kinds of beings on that ship, and they were all working, monitoring, working on consoles, you know.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, right. And they were very, very busy, you know, working with the Earth, basically. They were monitoring all these different things and different people on the Earth kind of doing what they can within universal law to help us, you know, continue to evolve.
Right. The Andromeda Council, this primary biosphere, like you're mentioning, I mean, imagine government center somewhere. This place is busy.
Yeah.
It's busy between the diplomats and the ambassadors and the attachés that go to the primary council meetings, as well as all the subcommittee meetings.
Mm-hmm.
This place is humming. There are people from across the cosmos, like I said, of all the different sizes, shapes, colors, dimensional living. Yeah, it's a busy, busy place.
And that's what I got from it. Even when I encountered Bagheet on this one ship, she said, you know, it was a funny experience. A lot of people have heard this before, but I don't know. I was just in deep meditation. All of a sudden, I was out of my body. I was on the ship, and I was going, wow, this is strange. And
right.
I see this beautiful blonde sitting in front of me at a console, you know, and doing her thing. And you know, typical human, you know, I go, whoa, who's that?
Of course.
You know, yeah. I go, who's that? You know, and she stands up and turns around, and she has big eyes and a feline face, still just beautiful. And she just runs up and just gives me this big hug, and I didn't even have a chance to react that she was different. And I just felt this, like, family, like long-lost family, and she was so happy to see me. It was just, you know, there's no way to react other than
sure.
Whoops. And then
I take it that they've known the true essence of you, necessary this human called James, but they've known the true essence of who you are for a long, long time.
Yeah, they made it very clear. I've been one of them, and it was one of many experiences out there zipping around the multiverse.
Yeah, they've told me the same thing, and it actually came from Tonka. He said, "Understand that if we're contacting you, then you're one of us."
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you've been to Earth many, many, many times.
Yeah.
And I know that I've been Lakota twice.
Mm-hmm.
I know that I was killed at the Battle of Wounded Knee.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever I start to tell these stories, I get these streams of vibrations or tingles going through me.
Yeah.
I remember the first time that I started to speak the language out loud, I had these tears that were starting to come down my face. I was like, wow, what is this all about? And they started to tell me, because I asked, they told me of my own heritage and the story of my lives, because I kept asking. But here's the point that I was trying to make, is that if we're here as a human and we're contacted by, for example, the people from Dakota, or you, Bagheet, wherever she's from, it's highly likely that that's your place of your spiritual origin, where your spiritual essence was first birthed.
Mm-hmm.
And if somebody by the name of Nathan is being visited by people from Sirius, as an example, then it's highly likely that he originally came from the Sirius star system.
Mm-hmm.
It's unlikely that somebody from Orion would visit you, if you're not originally from Orion. That seems to be the way, and that's what he told me. This is the way how it works.
Well, I think what they did with me is that it was kind of like an ambassador training, and so I had to meet all the different groups, but I also had full memory of living on those planets and having lifetimes on those planets. So they were activating those memories and also showing me, you know, a lot of different civilizations and how they, and their history. And some had some very, were very advanced races that were taken over by these, you know, reptilians and these other beings, that they were a very peaceful, highly evolved civilization that couldn't even comprehend somebody coming in and doing what they did. I mean, it wasn't even part of their reality. But, you know, they told me I needed to have those memories and I needed to connect. So I think, and I don't want to say I'm special or whatever else, but that's just been my experience, is that different groups have come to me and they've activated memories of actually being there. And I have real strong, like Pleiadian memories, the Orion Council of Light, I was part of that. And then I have also Native American memories here as being Native American. I, you know, I was black. I had a lot of Asian lifetimes as well as in Tibet. And one lifetime, actually, I was a Viking. You know, I had a big broad axe and I cut people up with it. You know,
yeah.
I was like, and I had to, I really had to do some healing on that one to clean that up. You know, it was like, but it gave me compassion and understanding and a connection for why people do what they do. You know, like as the Viking warrior, my whole family was murdered and killed, which turned me into this just vicious warrior. And I was in a lot of pain, you know, a lot of anger and a lot of pain, and it was expressed through my acts. That really wasn't the path, you know, it was something I had to overcome.
I don't have a complete recall of all lifetimes. I have a recall of about six or seven of them.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, there's some profound experiences for me in there. I will tell you, as a point of reference, just like Andromeda is both a constellation and a separate galaxy, in this case, the Pleiades is a constellation inside the open constellation of Taurus. Well, if you look at what's called the Pleiades, the seven sisters, there's I'm not sure I'm going to pronounce this one right. There's Alcyon or Alcyon,
mm-hmm.
Mero, and another five stars. One of those stars is Tegeta.
Mm-hmm.
And around Tegeta revolves four planets. Vela, Pyra, Dakote, and Era. And Era, E-R-R-A, is Era of the Billy Meyer contact.
Yeah, yeah.
So what I'm saying, in fact, is the people from the planet Dakote are Pleiadian. Mm-hmm. Why? Why? Because the star Tegeta is one of the seven sisters mm-hmm. of the Pleiadian constellation. So I always find it interesting, at least for me, so if somebody says, wow, they're Pleiadian, I would say, well, which one? You know,
yeah.
Where are they from? I mean, just as a point of curiosity and knowledge.
I would say, when are they from?
Well, yeah, that too.
Yeah, because they've had time travel for a long time. And so when you're talking to a Pleiadian, well, you know, when are they coming from? What part of the Pleiades are they coming from?
Very well said. Yeah. And, oh, yeah. Which dimension?
Yeah.
No, are you from the third, the fourth, the fifth, the sixth?
Yeah, we have one that comes here. Her name's Blaji, and she's what she told us, she says she's about 2 million years ahead of us in evolution, and she's actually coming in from a whole different dimension, but she's like a master teacher 2 million years ahead of us. And,
wow.
And boy, and she's just pure, pure love, you know, pure bliss. When you connect with her, and not a judgment in her body, you know, she just can't, you know, it's not part of her reality. She's, you know, very forgiving, very loving, and you know, to have these connections. And I'm sure what they told me once, they told me I was an old Pleiadian warrior, you know, and they said that because, you know, we had wars back then, you know, we had a lot of wars with the reptilians and some of the other beings there, and a lot of messes going on. But I thought that was interesting. But they told me on a soul level, the reason I was chosen, because they can't deal with the earth. A lot of them just can't handle the frequencies here.
And yes.
You have to have a little bit of that warrior in you, or you would just get torn to pieces. And it's sad because I see that all the time. I see people, you know, they're Pleiadian souls here, and they just can't deal with the energies here on the earth and all the what do you call it, the psychic turbulence and the lower vibrational frequencies. And And they, you know, I see them and I go, God, I feel sorry, because they don't belong. They don't belong in this society. But
their systems, their energy systems.
Yeah.
This particular kind of person you're talking about, their personal energy systems are sensitive.
Yeah.
To heavy oppressive negative energy. And I grew up that way. It was hard for me to be a little kid. It was really, really hard
mm-hmm.
because I just didn't understand, and to some degree I still don't understand why people treat each other the way that they do. I'm not saying everybody, but mm-hmm. yeah, there's a lot of negativity, control, manipulation by humans on this planet toward other humans that I've just never understood. It's not part of my makeup.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense whatsoever, because being that you have to take from others means you can't manifest from within. And all you're doing is just proving over and over again that you're not very evolved. You can't create your own reality. You can't manifest. You know, if you have to feed on others, that's a very low form of evolution. But you know, unfortunately, these guys have such massive egos, they haven't figured this out yet. You know, they haven't even figured out karma yet, which is quite interesting, or action reaction.
Well,
you know, they're still running that separation game and sense of entitlement.
Well, and you know, and speaking of, I mentioned the word feeding on, which made me think of this bunch of Draco and Hydra reptilians that have been on this planet for a while and are finally getting run off, which is good. I understand that there are two other planets just like Earth.
Mm-hmm.
that have been abused and manipulated and harassed, you know, choose all the terms that you want, mm-hmm. by the reptilians and their gray buddies,
mm-hmm.
that are also going to evolve after Earth does. So two planets just like Earth. And the only difference, yeah, the only difference is those planets don't have the diversity that we do. They maybe have one or two races, mm-hmm. tops.
Yeah.
And so they don't have the diversity nor the complexity of issues that we do. So our own evolution is going to be a lot easier. But beyond those two planets, I understand there are another 18 that have been all abused, ruled, maligned, manipulated, et cetera, by the reptilians that need to be cleaned up. Why? Because these reptilians, these Dracos and Hydra reptilians are self-centered, closed evolutional loop. They're never going to evolve beyond who and what they are. And so they abuse people.
Mm-hmm.
And they use them as a resource over and over and over again. So I had some people ask me recently, well, you know, do you think the people then, the Andromeda Council, might be interested in my help? Because there's any way I can help. I'd love to. And I've said, there are a lot of other planets of people just like Earth that have been abused and manipulated and taken advantage of for years. And as soon as we evolve to the next level and become fourth dimensional humans and we start becoming a space-faring society, we're talking outer space,
mm-hmm.
that's when you can start helping. You know, you want to volunteer, you want to go off planet and help with the cleanup process? And sure. Yeah, they could use all help. They can use all the help that they can get. Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm starting to reevaluate my decision on this planet. You know, it's like I'm ready for a vacation and anytime they want to come by and pick me up and put me in a restoration chamber, I'm all for it.
Yeah, this is a tough planet. It's a man. What a tough place to have lessons and experiences.
Oh yeah. It's so funny too. It's like when I'm in dealing, you know, because we are on the cutting edge, and we're bringing all these cutting edge physicists here. You know, they're talking about fuelless energy technologies, and you know, all of the things we're not supposed to be doing. You know, they're taboo. I mean, UFOs, fuelless energy, you know, talking about the inner earth, all the other stuff, you know, that, and it's amazing. So you get these people that don't have a clue. You know, they're totally locked into social consciousness. They've been manipulated all their life, and they think that this is the way things are supposed to be. And you got to deal with these people, and you talk to them, and you go, and they get these blank looks on their faces, and you just say, well, straight up, I want you to think about this. Why do you think you have the right to force somebody else to do something or take something from somebody? What, I'm just curious, what gives you that right? And they'll go, oh, the state of Washington or the state of, you know, this. And I go, no, let's go back to the original idea. What gives you the right to trespass on another person's reality or to take from another person?
Thank you.
Yeah. And it's amazing. And they don't get it. I mean, it might sink in down the road, but our whole system is doing that. That's the sad thing about it.
You raise a very good point. Each of us, you know, even though we are a spark of the original, whether you call it the force, the source, the creator, creation, God, whatever word people use,
mm-hmm.
even though we're part of that greater collective creation of life, we are on Earth each individual sovereign people.
Mm-hmm.
And that knowing has gotten so buried with town governments and county governments and state governments and federal governments and laws and regulations. People are regulated to death.
Mm-hmm.
It's for people that are in the box, I would imagine it's very hard for them to even think about how they can express themselves individually if they've been in their box their whole lives.
Oh yeah.
But the bottom line is this process of this current process, this transition that we're going through, mm-hmm. is a transition first of consciousness. That's this first step that we're in right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that this is part of the process, which is, hey, I'm a unique sovereign person. I have rights. You can't run my life.
They just accept the slavery. You know, they've been doing it for so long. It's like the frog in the pot. You know,
it's been
going on for so long that they don't even realize they're in it.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
And what's funny is that the powers that be don't even have to do anything because they're so programmed they'll do it for them.
Well, yeah, there are certainly a lot of people who are afraid of the repercussions, the reprisals.
Mm-hmm.
If I don't do this, the system's going to spank me. It's going to spank me hard. And then I'll have problems getting credit, and then I can't. They're worried about their credit rating. That's probably the number one thing that people are worried about. Which brings me to a topic which is probably worth at least touching on.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that as we evolve out of this money-driven and money-based economic system, and it becomes a system that's more based on trade, where the sole essence of being is not driven by the ability to earn a dollar, but by the ability to create new products, by the ability to help people, by the ability to create another form of free energy.
Mm-hmm.
When the sharing of those services, products, and the sharing of the services that will evolve out of this transition and ultimately this evolution, transformation that we're going through as we become higher dimensional beings, you will find that there will be a period of transition, but will no longer be driven by a money-based economic system.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
And once that happens, there's going to be a huge change, big.
Well, you know, I agree 100% because, you know, that's basically where we operate here at the ranch. It's a very different way of operating, but, you know, no advanced civilization uses money. They just don't use it.
And, you've been told that, huh?
Yeah. They also said their leadership are chosen because of their spiritual abilities and evolution, you know, and their record of service.
Yes, that's right.
What the hell are we doing? You know, it's like,
I got a story for you. There's this guy who is I don't know what his full title is, but his name is Pyra. And he is the economic advisor to the Andromeda Council. He's also kind of the guy that talks to the ear of this commander that I've been talking to since, mm-hmm. that I met in 93, that I'm talking to a lot recently. And I'll tell the commander, hey, listen, I'm doing this. You got to understand something. If you want me to go to this level, it takes some considerable money. For me to go on the global speaking tour, I have to put this in place and this in place and this in place. And he looks at Pyra, and Pyra's going, yeah, sorry to tell you, it takes money. Or anything, you know, anything in this life that takes a major leap where finance is involved, it's not something they deal with. And he'll just look at Pyra and go, what's he talking about? And Pyra, it's like this. I go, oh.
Yeah.
Because they don't deal with it.
No, it's not their reality at all.
Yeah, and if they, that's part, actually, here's the piece that ties all this together. When we finally become fourth dimensional people that have fourth dimensional capabilities, whether you're lower fourth or mid fourth or upper fourth, you have telekinesis capabilities and teleportation capabilities, and we have other capabilities, including instant manifestation. Well, if we can instantly manifest things that we need, and if we can grow crops easily that already have nutrients and proteins in them that we need, then Why do we need money? It doesn't. The need for money goes away.
Mm-hmm.
It completely goes away. And it shifts to the advancement of self, the betterment of self, for the betterment of society, for the betterment of your local neighborhood. I mean, the need for money doesn't exist if you can create technology that manifests matter at a certain level, and if you can manifest on your own.
Yeah, I agree 100%.
The need for money goes away.
But how do you get people from A to Z? What I've seen is, like, I was talking to this one guy, a good example, and he was saying, you know what, we can get our car 30% on water and 70% on gas. And I said, really? And I said, well, you know, there's more efficient ways of doing that where you can run your car on water 100%, and those are starting to come out, where the splitters, you know, and 100%. And I said, but there's other technologies with an electric car. If you put these other little generators on them, that car you can drive the tires off. And I said, but let's take it to the next level. Let's get the anti-gravity, and then you don't even need tires. And you've got fuelless technology. You don't need tires. And then let's go one level up and go to counter gravity, where you can pop off at 7,000 miles an hour and, you know, go have lunch in Australia. But take people from one step to the other. It's like they're still, they can't even believe you could actually run your car in water. I mean, that getting them to that step is quite a change.
Well,
but I see that when these technologies come out, and they are out, I know where they are. They haven't hit the mainstream yet, but some are about ready to. When they come out, I tell people, think about this. If you didn't have to pay for your gas, if you didn't have to, you know, your vehicle gas and upkeep, if you didn't have to pay for your utilities and everything else, how much more wealthy would you be? Like crunch the numbers.
That's right.
Yeah. And I said, now think about this. A kernel of corn, put it in the ground, it grows over 500 kernels. Each ear of corn has 500 kernels. Some have two stalks, you know, 1,000 kernels. But, you know, you look at that, and then you plant those in the ground, and it's exponential. It's just amazing when you look at the abundance of nature. And I see mountains of grain thrown away. I mean, literally mountains of grain, of corn and wheat and things like that, just to keep prices right, you know, or up or whatever. There's no reason anybody should go without food and not live abundantly.
That's wrong.
Yeah.
That process. Yeah.
And housing, you know, and everything, it's just, you know, if you brought these technologies forward and you just had a really good dispersal system of the food, you know, there's other things too that, you know, the healing technologies too are just beyond imagination that have been suppressed. You know, medical bills would go out the door too. So, you know, people would live just an incredible, they could live heaven on earth if it would just get these oppressive groups off of our backs. You know, that's the main thing. The people that are, you know, a good example is, let's say if I, you know, like the hemp, you know, the oil from the hemp.
Sure.
You know, yeah,
sure.
They're curing cancer. They're curing everything with it. They're having all these amazing things happen from it. You know, if I had a cure for diabetes, do you think the pharmaceutical company would let that come out? I mean, I would be dead in a heartbeat once I brought it out and said, hey, here it is. It's inexpensive. Go for it. You know, and I think that's what this Occupy movement is figuring out, is that you've got the war industry, the oil industry, the pharmaceutical industry running the planet, these major corporations, and you're never going to have universal peace. You're not going to have fuelless energy technology or the cures for diseases as long as you have these big corporations running the show. And I think that's what the big awakening's about, that people are finally figuring out, you know, who these people are, what they've been doing to us for so long. And some are even figuring out who's manipulating them, you know?
Well, yeah, that's a good point. But, you know, part of, and I'm not sure what your people, your own contacts have told you about the transition, this mm-hmm. moment in time, and the evolution that this planet's going through. But everything that they've told me tells me that this solar system and this planet is right now on a path for dimensional evolution.
Mm-hmm.
And that in the very near future, within 2 years, we're going to become a next dimensional planet. Whether you call it mid-fourth or that this planet is going to transform.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to evolve and transform into a world of a different vibration. And part of that transformation is that if during this process, it is progressive, so that because we're being bathed in more fourth dimensional energy, both from this blue star that arrived recently and from this galactic equatorial plane, if we're getting bathed from fourth dimensional energy from many areas of space, then we as people are going to start taking on more and more, and we're going to start exhibiting more and more aspects of fourth dimensional living,
mm-hmm.
which includes telepathy. Now, people may not think of it as telepathy, but what's going to happen is all of the, for lack of a better word, all of the veils and the lies, people are going to start seeing through them.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, they pretty much told me the same thing as that. And they said, you know, all the deceptions are going to be made known. And
there you go.
And all the lies are going to be made known. And they also said, too, that people are going to have both telepathy and direct knowing. They just know.
Right.
You know, they don't know why they know. They just know. And they get back in touch with their heart and their intuition, and they're going to go, you know what, this is all nonsense. And some of us already have that. I mean, as soon as we see an official stand up to the podium, we just go, oh, God, you know?
Wait. You mean you watch that stuff?
No, I actually don't. But
I know. I'm teasing.
All I have to do is watch 1 minute of it, and I've already got the guy figured out.
But, I know.
But I'm saying what they said to me was that the same thing. We are moving into, they actually said some people are going to go into the fifth dimension, you know, those who actually came in from there to assist in this awakening process that's going on. But they definitely said that that these people, the tyrants and the oppressors and those people that are living off of the work of others and, you know, the parasites, are not going to be frequency specific to the Earth and where she's going. So
that makes sense.
Yeah, and they made it very clear they won't be able to function or operate. Their empires can't sustain themselves. And those that aren't aligned with universal law or living in harmony with each other and the planet, those things just won't exist. They can't maintain themselves with these new frequencies and this higher conscious and the energy that's coming in.
Well said. Yeah, very well said. Absolutely. Yeah. 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 It's like I said, the the veils will
mm-hmm.
start peeling away, and people will continue to see through the lies, and they'll also continue to see that they don't need an oppressive or at least manipulative and controlling force, you know, like a government or a, I think a government is the only term I can come up with right now.
Yeah.
That tells them how to live,
mm-hmm.
how to live, what to buy, how healthcare should be. It's all going to come crumbling down. It just is.
Oh yeah. You know, as people become enlightened too, they're just going to make different choices. And as they make those different choices, the other choices that are pushed on them or tried to force on them are just going to fall away. They're just going to say, no, I don't think I'll participate in this one. And that's what I'm saying, just a huge movement now of it's kind of like non-compliance, you know, peaceful non-compliance. Sorry, we're not going there.
Very, very well said. And it really is. It's not... I mean, the Occupy movement is important because it's happened,
mm-hmm.
but it's not because of collective groups of people that are in these Occupy movements in different cities. It's because there are, if you will, as a metaphor, there are lights going off in individual people who are saying, I'm not going to comply anymore. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to buy into this program anymore. I'm not going to pay attention. Moreover, I'm not even going to give it any energy. It can go on its own, but I'm not going to participate in it. And I think it's beautiful that people are waking up. Mm-hmm. I mean, they become a collective once they start to get together and make collective decisions. But it's this story is really all about the awakening of the human race on this planet, one individual at a time.
Mm-hmm. The this is getting a little off topic, but I'm really curious as to there's so many different things going on in ufology. And when you get into ufology, they basically eat their own. They're like it's an amazing. I've never seen anything like it, but. The competition and the boxes, and everybody thinks they have the whole pie, but they just have a piece of it. And it's sad, but the lack of cooperation there, is quite interesting. But I kind of stepped out of it. I stopped doing the congresses and the other stuff just because of that. It was taking such a negative direction, and it was so infiltrated that I just said, I'm just going to focus on my own work and reach people that way. But I'm really curious what are the different beings and the different ships, the different types of ships. I know we have back engineered ships that we've been toying around with and we've been playing around on the moon and Mars and other places. But I'm curious as to what kind of ships maybe the Andromedans have or some of the other smaller ships that you've seen.
I can tell you this. What I've learned is that the Andromeda Council primary biosphere, the one that I've visited quite a few times, so far all of those visits, I want to be clear here, so far they've all been my original spiritual essence body. Use the planet. I'm laying down, I'm sleeping, I'm taking a nap. Mm-hmm. I guess some people might call that out of body.
Yeah.
So my spiritual essence goes up on the biosphere and I attend a number of meetings. What I can tell you is that with regard to that biosphere, as well as their smaller scout crafts is what they call them, they're powered by crystals. It's either kind of like this. They're either small crystals that are inserted, but the large biosphere, there's this there are four floors with a crystal blue tube in the middle. And this tube in the middle is the power generation source for this whole planetoid. Mm-hmm. This biosphere is about the size of Pluto. There are 5,000 crew members plus their families. There's an executive staff of 15, and I know some of the primary officers. But there's like this, it looks like plasma, but it's crystal. It's, mm-hmm. it's fine matter crystal. Now, here's a connection. What I've learned about our own evolution is that we as organic matter, three-dimensional humans on this planet, living this human life, when we finally evolve into becoming fourth-dimensional human beings, our bodily structure will transform from being carbon-12 organic matter into being carbon-7 crystalline fine matter, mm-hmm. which is kind of cool. I'm like, oh, all right, so the ships that are three-dimensional and fourth-dimensional and fifth and sixth, because they have to have quarters for all these people, but the power source is crystal in one form or another. And the power source that runs the smaller scout crafts is crystalline-based. Mm-hmm. So that's as much as I know about the scout crafts and the power source. this particular biosphere, it's 26 floors. There's an observatory, mm-hmm. in the upper area. There's an observatory in the lower, if you will, the South Pole kind of area.
Mm-hmm.
There are living quarters on the inside. Some people certainly have living quarters that have, like a clear glass so you can look out into space.
Mm-hmm.
There are parks. There are animals that graze. There's recreation areas. Of course, there's a lot of meeting areas. These things hold, I'm doing this off the top of my head, that maximum, this particular size biosphere will hold upwards of 2 million people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's right now, it's only got about, 250,000 people in it max. You know, if you look at the crew members and their family.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty empty. So far, it has also what you think of as like a kind of Disney World monorail system. And one goes in one direction, one goes in another direction, and it runs around the inner core of the planet's surface. So you've got two of these that are going cross-diagonally that transport people all the time. It also has elevator kind of things. Because keep in mind, it has to, because some of the members of the Andromeda Council, the former members, are still third dimensional.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, physically it has to have these structures. I understand that there are also 11 other biospheres, and 6 of the total 12 are what we on Earth would consider to be hospital biospheres, but not in the form that we would think of them.
Mm-hmm.
They're hospitals in that with this ongoing transition, more importantly, the evolution from third to fourth, there are some people who've been so spiritually and emotionally damaged, they're going to need some help. They're going to need some help healing.
Mm-hmm.
And so by the use of light energy and sound energy at different frequencies, these 6 biospheres are going to be available for whoever wants any help during the evolutionary process of transition from the third to the fourth. You know, for whoever wants it or needs it. Keep in mind, fourth dimensional bodies don't need physical health care.
Yeah.
Because there's no death.
Yeah, I'm all for that. Sign me up. I could use a little R&R in one of those.
Yeah.
One of those biospheres.
Yeah.
It's really interesting. The higher beings that I've been working with, they all have the same theme. And they all talk about releasing the past, about healing as priority, and making our own personal connection with Creator, whatever name you want to give it. But it's funny, they all have basically the same theme, you know, and it almost gets old, you know, hearing the same thing over and over again.
It's interesting that you're talking about this, because I had somebody write to me just a couple of days ago, and you're absolutely right. I've told this story so many times. She was asking about how can I be in contact with them. And given what she's already told me about herself, I said, the best thing you can do, the first thing that you ought to do is get into nature, go outside, get in touch with yourself, get in touch with whatever the Creator means to you, heal. Because I can tell based on some of the things that she's written to me that there's still some fear there.
Mm-hmm.
In order to get to the levels that you and I are working at in terms of all of this contact, all the fear's got to be gone.
Oh, yeah.
There can't be any fear. And most people, if they had a conversation with us about this, we could explain in a few minutes what this means, but it literally means taking that step about any particular topic and having no fear,
mm-hmm.
as to what the outcome will be. And not everybody realizes that that's the first step in growth, is to cleanse and heal and transmute and grow and release all fear. And once you release all fear, anything becomes possible. Anything.
Mm-hmm.
Anything. And I don't know if that's consistent with what you've heard, but they've told me in different words the very much the same thing.
Yeah, it was. What happened with me is I had a drowning where I actually crossed over and I went into that plane of bliss. And ever since that experience, death just lost its sting and fear. And one of the greatest challenges is fear of death. I mean, it was what even Jesus had to transcend. But, you know, it's a biggie. And it always, you know, plays back. And then you have to release the past because, you know, we've been killed many times over and over.
Right.
And so you got those programs running. And anytime you have something you don't understand that's emanating a lot of power and energy, you automatically, you know, your defenses go up. But, you know, you have to transcend all that stuff. And I think that's with me is everybody runs and I'm the guy that's running towards the event, you know,
yeah.
And a lot of people are running in the other direction. And I've always been that way. It's like, even I've had Bigfoot experiences here, you know, and I, you know, you hear the thing howl, you know, and it howls over there and I'm the first guy out, you know, to go check it out.
Yeah, that's right. Let's go say hi.
Yeah. And, you know, everybody else is going, what are you doing? You know, locking the doors and everything. So,
you know, if I can add this one small piece, and this is really important for people to, at least I feel it's important for people to ingest and come to understand, is that here's a metaphor, the biological suit, if you will, that people look at when they see James Gillian.
Mm-hmm.
I hope I'm pronouncing this right. The person that they see, that's not who you are. That's a living biological suit. The true essence of who you are is a higher dimensional being that has almost an infinite life. And if this biological suit dies, then it dies.
Mm-hmm.
But it's okay. It's okay, because the true essence of who you are is virtually infinite.
Yeah.
And and you're right, an amazing freedom comes when you get to the place where you go, oh, is that how that works? Okay.
Mm-hmm. And I noticed, too, that, you know, you're talking about perceptions, is people can only perceive according to their reference points. And so if they just think all they are is a 3D body existing in social consciousness, that's all they're going to see, you know, reflected back to them. That's all they're going to be able to perceive. But if they realize they're a multidimensional being, you know, existing on a vibrational continuum, and they're in touch with that, then they're going to see that reflected back to them, you know, above and beyond the Earth suit. And that's what I've seen over and over again. People are going to project, you know, on you what they think you are or who you should be or anything else. And it's so interesting when you're aware of that and you feel all those different projections and you're going, oh, that's interesting. You know, it's like, or they want to act out, you know, a certain way and things like that. Or and you just go, I don't think I'll participate in this one.
That's right. Yeah. We have a right not to pay attention to the you shoulds. All the people say, you should, you ought to, you need to. And I'm like, well, no, I don't. You know, that's your perception of the way you think the world should work.
I need
to go inside and, you know, listen to that quiet, knowing part of self that says,
mm-hmm.
No, this is the right thing to do. I need not to participate in this. And you just, like you and I have talked about, you just make a decision and you, whatever that issue is, you just give it no more energy and you go your own way. Just go your own way.
Yeah, bless it and move on.
Right. Yeah, well said. Yeah.
We're coming up pretty close to the end of the hour here, and so we've just got a couple minutes left. I want to definitely give your website again so people can get in touch with you and any other messages that you want to end on.
Oh, sure. Thank you. It's really simple. It's AndromedaCouncil.com. And in terms of a closing message, boy, I'll tell you, we've gone into so much depth already, and the messages are so simple. I need to have this come from my heart. I would say to people, feel free, and by that I mean don't be afraid. Feel free to open your hearts and your ears and your minds and your souls and explore what this transition time is about for us. And be inquisitive, be curious about what this new life is that's coming. For the people that aren't there yet, live every moment of every hour of every day in that moment, and really appreciate what that moment is bringing to you. Some of them are not really big events. Some of them are really as small as that little girl that you told me about with the big, beautiful eyes giving you a hug. Mm-hmm. Those moments are priceless.
Oh, yeah.
So I would recommend that people live in the moment and not be afraid of the future, because the future that's coming is absolutely amazing. We have an amazing future coming to us. I think that's the one message I would give.
Yeah. Well, on that note, that's a great ending. We've run out of time, unfortunately. I can't thank you enough for coming on the show, and I'm sure we'll stay in touch. And it's been just an awesome interview, and I hope people can glean the little pearls that have been dropped here and use them in their everyday lives and maybe be open to these higher dimensional beings and the contacts that are happening.
Yeah, very true. James, it's been a pleasure. I've honestly really enjoyed it. I feel blessed. It's been a really enjoyable conversation. Thank you.
All right. Well, we'll stay in touch and have a good evening. I've got to sign off here. Unfortunately, we're out of time. And I'm your host, James Gilliland. Have a great evening.